Well, let's start the insanity. Giddy up.
New York Bozo! New York Bozo!
Yes, I bet you assumed that I air guitar to this intro every time. I definitely do. Your Green Bay Packers are 2020 NFC North Division champs, and thanks to a Saints loss today, now sit atop the NFC, and I believe control their own destiny, as they say. Getting the thumbs up from Tex on the video, so that is accurate. We always like to fact check here. It was an MVP performance from the quarterback as the Packers leave Detroit victorious. 31-24 was the final score. Oh, baby, let's talk all about it. We are two schlitz to the wind here on the APC Pod Rapid Recap Reaction Podcast at the APC Pod on Twitter. I'm Zach Rapport in my new home studio in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at Zach Rapport on Twitter. And I am joined by my my brother in brown liquor here, Tex Western. How are you, man?
Here. Yeah.
Cheers.
No, cheers to you. Cheers to the Packers and to Aaron Rodgers. So I'm drinking a scotch tonight in honor of a 4-touchdown game from him, 3 through the air, 1 on the ground. And trying to kick back and, enjoy the rest of my evening knowing that the Packers are sitting in the number one spot in the NFC.
Absolutely, man. I went for Woodford, which I referred to before we hit record as entry-level fancy, but I think we should both give a nod to our buddy Matub, because it's his tradition to pour a brown liquor for a victory, and that was in both of our minds as we did that without coordinating at all. So he's with us here in spirit.
That's true. Although, to be fair, it doesn't really take much of an excuse for me to pour out a dram of whiskey. So
that's true. Tuesday, done.
Pretty much, especially in the pandemic, man. It's all right. Well, I've had a little bit of a rough day because my cat bothered me one too many times during my afternoon conference calls. So, yeah, I need a drink.
Let's pour
a glass of bourbon.
Let's uncork it. all right, let's talk football. We are going to get into players themselves, but I wanted to start with a theme in the latter half of this game: ball control. Because tied 14 all at the half, the Packers desperately needed to find a way to score some points and play keep away, and boy did they ever. They scored 14 points, controlled the ball for I believe like all but 1 minute of the third quarter and going into the fourth quarter as well. Tex, I got to be honest, I was both impressed and surprised by their ability to sort of thoroughly grind out a large percentage of this game that way coming out of halftime.
Yeah, for sure. And it was funny because it looked like that first drive coming out of halftime was going to be a 3-and-out until this phantom holding flag that nobody saw, including the announcers, for probably a good almost 30 seconds after that play. That came in, and from what I was reading on Twitter, there were a couple of people saying, yeah, it was absolutely a legitimate flag. But that was looking like it was going to be an ugly start to the second half. And then, yeah, they get that, that first down via penalty. And then at that point, it's just, yep, nice, steady, normal kind of Packers drive that ends in a touchdown.
Was it holding against the intended receiver on that play?
It was Oruarie who was covering MVS.
And he got his hand around Rogers, him, I think, a little bit.
And Rogers kind of tried to go deep to him up the right sideline. And part of the reason he was not able to get to that was because he was held earlier.
Yeah. I saw that in real time and thought, that's a flag. And then they just kept talking and didn't mention anything. I was like, are we not throwing a flag here? And then like, oh, by the way, there was a flag. And I was like, thank you. But why don't we talk about the refs for a second? Because Packers Lions wouldn't be Packers Lions without a bunch of bonehead calls going both ways, man.
Yeah.
A terrible day.
Yeah. The two reviews in the last couple minutes of the game. I think that was probably still a catch by Marvin Jones. I guess I sort of get why they ruled it. They ruled that the play stood as an incompletion because, you know, it was really tough to be able to see exactly when he had possession and when that first toe was down. But
yeah.
I regardless, it's a hell of an effort. Would have been first and goal on the half yard line. I mean, ultimately, the Lions went down and scored a touchdown anyway, but that would have changed the complexion in terms of how much time was left. And then you get the review on the onside kick, which was just a mess. And then, yeah, just weird penalties and some missed flags and some key flags and on big plays and things. And the Packers defense just continually shooting themselves in the foot in the second half with penalties. Yeah, it was weird out there.
Yeah, they had like some 9 or 10, maybe more penalties on the Packers in this game.
Yeah, it was some huge number. Yeah, actually, it was 12.
Ooh.
They got 12 penalties for 68 yards. So none of them were, you know, the big, you know, drive killing type. They had a couple of holding penalties, but, you know, no big pass interferences or anything, but a couple of those, you know, defensive holding calls and just unfortunate things that gave Detroit another shot here on a couple of occasions.
Anytime I have to hear Dean Blandino like two or more times in a game, I'm not having a good time, man.
Yeah, that's never fun, for sure.
All right, well, enough about the flags and the laundry and the zebras. Let's talk about the players. Aaron Rodgers, you mentioned what a day he had. 26 of 33. That's a 78% completion percentage, I believe, unless my math is wrong. You are the mathematician. I am not.
Sounds right.
78% percent completion percentage, 290 yards, 3 passing touchdowns, no picks. And as you mentioned, the old man ran one in for a score as well. Why the hell not? Tex, what else is there to say other than 37-year-old Rodgers strengthening his case for the MVP in this game?
Yeah. I mean, this is looking at the numbers. This was his 6th game in a row with over 70% completions, a passer rating of 108 or more, and multiple touchdowns. I think only one of those games in there he had fewer than 8 or 8.5 yards per attempt. So, yeah, this is easily one of the best stretches of football that he has ever played in his career, and that goes back to the 2011 and 2014 seasons. And I think with Patrick Mahomes throwing 3 picks in an eventual win against Miami today, he went off for almost 400 yards, but he had a really ugly first half. So, I think if I had a vote, which I don't, I'd certainly give it to the old man, but admittedly, I'm a little biased too.
Oh, man. Let's talk about Davante Adams for a second. Had himself a game. Well, really, let's talk about, I noticed this. I was texting a little bit with Alex Patakis, my co-host here, during the week. And this is maybe like a layman's observation, and maybe it's not even technically true, Tex. I'll bounce this off of you. But when Adams makes that big play score in the first quarter, I was just kind of hit with this realization that just over the last few years, it feels like the Packers have had some good players on offense. You have your Adams and your Jones, et cetera. But the big plays don't go for touchdowns. And this year, it feels like the big plays are going for touchdowns. They're getting home. You're getting those plays that are worthy of like halftime highlights in other games. And I don't know, that feels like new and fresh this year relative to the last few years. And it feels good.
Yeah, I kind of see what you're saying there. I mean, Adams has had a few big ones. MVS has had a couple of those deep balls. And then he had that big 78-yard catch and run a couple of weeks ago, too. And even Aaron Jones with a couple of his real long runs this year, you know, the one last week in Philly and then the first game against Detroit with that long one. So, yeah, I see where you're going there. But I mean, with Adams, just ho-hum, another, you know, 100-yard one touchdown game. Like what more can this guy do? I mean, it's ridiculous at this point. I mean, 8 straight games with a receiving touchdown is just completely absurd.
Yeah.
And so congrats to him on setting that team record.
Yeah. Franchise record.
Mark. Yep.
Yeah. And I don't mean to bring this up to say the Packers don't have any big plays. The stats obviously show otherwise over the last number of years. But it always had seemed like, oh, it's a 40-yard play that doesn't quite make into the end zone. It's like a 60-yard run and then it gets tackled at midfield or something, you know, and it's just touchdowns all around, just bullseye every time. It feels good and weird. Like, I don't know, you know, as we've mentioned from time to time this season, there's production levels and sort of inklings and whispers of 2010, 2011, those sort of early prime Rodgers seasons, from a production standpoint. And I don't know, just I feel it's like, just feels, it feels fun and also weird at the same time. It's, I feel like that what year is it gif half the time. Well,
yeah. Well, and we haven't had a chance to talk about really Jones's run last week with Bakhtiari basically crossing the goal line with him. That was a lot of fun. Just, you know, watching the big man rumble down the field. And,
man, I get winded on a flight of stairs. That guy is 300 pounds and he ran basically the length of the field and he appeared to be totally unfazed.
friend of show, Mina Kimes, I saw on Twitter called that high key, the most athletic play pound for pound she's seen in football all year.
Oh yeah. For how big he is. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah. So no, that was a fun one, and I feel like another one of those that's definitely going to go down in the you know, the APC top 10 when we do that in the off season.
Absolutely. And really, really quickly, not to get sidetracked, but you mentioned not getting a chance to talk about that play. I know we haven't produced as much podcast content in the last couple of weeks as we would have liked to, but as I mentioned earlier, moving to a new house, getting everything set up, and you know, life stuff happens. So I appreciate everyone bearing with us, and we are here now. We're here now. That's what's important.
Right. Yes.
Here now to celebrate the Packers as division winners here. I want to talk really quickly about Marquez Valdes-Scantling as well.
Yes.
6 receptions, 85 yards, and a touchdown. Lesser stats than Devontae and not a career day, quote unquote, for him in the stat sheet. But I would argue that it was a career day in terms of being his most complete performance to date. What do you think?
Absolutely. I was saying that to Chris Burke at APC earlier today after the game. And yeah, without question, I think he did all of the things that you expect a good, complete wide receiver to do in this game.
Yep.
Tremendous hands catch, contested catch on his touchdown. That one was a mind-blowing play just based on, you know, the fact that he's had so many issues with contested catches throughout his career and even dropping the easy ones. So for him to make that play was got to be a huge confidence booster. And yeah, I mean, he was doing it at all levels. He didn't have the deep ball today, but he was able to be productive and move the chains on some third downs. And you know, he was doing another really good game blocking in the run game as well. So props to MVS for a really solid game all around.
And I wanted to mention that I heard, I think it was Tom Silverstein on his podcast talking about MVS a couple days ago and saying something like, you know, there's basically two types of receivers. There's body catchers and there's hands catchers. And it's really, really hard to be a good body catcher. So you should strive, most players strive to be a hands catcher. But either way, it has seemed like to date, MVS has struggled to pick one, to really commit to be what kind of pass catcher is he? And that really resonated with me because there have been plays this past season that ultimately end up being drops. And you see this weird hesitation in real time from him where it's almost like in the moment he's having trouble deciding how he's going to attempt the catch. And I just saw none of that hesitation in this game. And you mentioned the touchdown catch. It was hands all the way, and he was confident all the way, and it was a remarkable play.
Yeah, I mean, the hesitation, I almost look back at one of the best plays I feel like that illustrates that was his long touchdown against San Francisco, the one where he was wide open crossing the goal line. And it, you know, he's turned around with his entire body facing Rodgers and facing the ball. And it sort of looked like, yeah, he was in that weird in between, like, you know, how am I going to catch this thing?
Yeah.
And you know, thank goodness that one he hauled in for that score. But yeah, I think that's a really good breakdown of that with some of the issues that he's had. But none of those today. I don't know if he was kind of trying to channel his inner Devontae Adams, who I think is very much a hands catcher at this point. He's made some tremendous catches on some slightly inaccurate balls from Rodgers and had another one or two of them today. But great performance by MVS. I'm happy for the guy. I'm rooting for him. And it's, you know, it was nice to see that today after a couple of games where, you know, he didn't really have a whole lot of production too.
Yeah. Speaking of rooting for guys, one more hit on the offense and it is my man.
Big
Bob. Mr. Tunyon. Mr. Robert Tunyon Jr. Is he a junior? Did we?
I think he's a junior.
He's a junior. Well, not a junior in the touchdown category. 9 touchdowns this season. Usually I've got like a question I'm going to throw to you. I just wanted to celebrate. I love when when the Packers have a good tight end. It is rare, and it's my favorite position for no particular reason. And I'm just so thrilled that he has come on the way he has. Awesome to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he's really turned into a key possession receiver on this team, too. I mean, they went to him on that last third down to move the chains.
Yep.
You know, got him on the play action leak play. They went to him in a couple other spots where they needed to pick up some yardage on like second and longs to get in a good position to move the chains on third down. So, yeah, is he the most physically gifted? Is he, you know, purely the most talented tight end in the league? No, but he's absolutely one of the most productive between the ways he's getting open and just the way that the Packers are using him within the offense. And it's great to see. He's absolutely going to make the Pro Bowl this year, I think. I don't think there's any question in my mind about that. And yeah, he's really, you know, making a mark on the Packers record book at that position.
Yeah. Well, we've been riding high talking about all this production. So, I don't mean to bring us down, but let's shift gears and talk about some not so nice things. Special teams for one, although Mason Crosby also obviously with a 58-yard field goal was awesome, and I quite honestly did not expect that to go through. But another crucial special teams blunder late in this game to give up a huge kickoff return. Is Menenga done after this year? I mean, this is like several games in a row, it feels like.
I see no pathway to him keeping his job. Honestly, at this point, even with, you know, even if the Packers were to go on and win a Super Bowl, unless the special teams suddenly become a massive strength, and particularly in the coverage units, because, you know, that's 2 games in a row, 3 out of the last 5, I think, with major long returns, you know, the 2 punt returns. But hey, at least we know that Mason Crosby is a better tackler than J.K. Scott. So we
absolutely.
For us.
Oh, where's my rim? I don't have a rim shot. Yeah, I mean, and also Menenga avoided a major disaster with that with the onside kick that ultimately did go out of bounds. But I mean, that was, you know, a few inches away from going the other way.
Yep. Yeah. It's. You wonder how much longer the Packers can keep having terrible special teams. I mean, it's been this way for the better part of the last decade, right? You know, going back to Zook, going back to Slocum. And honestly, like, I'm trying to remember the last year where I felt like the special teams top to bottom were overall a strength on this team. And
1996.
Yeah, I'm kind of coming up empty here. So, you know, they're not as bad as, say, the Chargers, but that's the lowest possible bar to clear at this point, because the Chargers special teams are epically, historically bad this year. So, you know, saying that you're not as bad as the potentially the worst unit in history is not something to be proud of. And I would be shocked if Menenga comes back next year.
Who's down in... For the Chargers, is that Ron Zook? Did he water ski on over there?
I don't think so. I think the Chargers special teams coach, I believe, is the former wide receivers coach for the Vikings up until a couple years ago. So,
sure, why not? That makes sense.
Yeah, but just, yeah, don't, no, no. There's got to be a change coming, right? Come on.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of gotta be a change, maybe a change. I don't know. Defense, you know, well, there's not a lot to complain about this year. In terms of just the team is winning, productive. We're here to celebrate all this good stuff. You know, this isn't a cop out, but I'm not smart enough always to know when something is like on the players versus the coordinator. But Tex, I couldn't help but come away from several series in this game again, very annoyed with Mike Pettine. What did you think broadly of the way the defense looked today and how that reflects on Pettine?
I'm frustrated having seen this defense play a lot of man last week against Philly and have a lot of success. Go back to a really zone heavy scheme again. against a quarterback who's probably more likely to be able to beat zone coverage than a guy like Carson Wentz, who has been chasing ghosts for the last year. Matthew Stafford is too good to not be able to find holes in the zone as long as he's got just enough time to get the ball away. And in the first half, there were points where he didn't. I mean, Packers had 4 sacks in the first half, and the pass rush looked like it was really pretty strong. But yeah, that's I think my biggest gripe is you've got some guys I think who can really play well in more of a man scheme. You got a guy in Jaire Alexander who can play in anything. I mean, he can cover anybody in any kind of scheme you want him to. So it's clear that yes, you know, it's still the philosophy of you'd rather die by 1,000 cuts than by, you know, one massive gunshot. But you still die either way, and that's the thing that kills me about Pettine's approach. So, I would almost at this point, you know, I would take the one or two big plays on occasion if it means that the Packers would, you know, get the stops more consistently and, you know, be able to make plays on the football because they're actually sticking to receivers.
Yeah.
So that's my biggest gripe at this point.
And you mentioned Jaire Alexander. I joked a couple weeks ago about the Packers wasting his prime. But, I mean, really, here's a guy who is playing out of his mind this year. And this team still blows all of these, like, favorable defensive down and distance plays. It is just – it's frustrating mm-hmm. to watch a guy with such talent, such swagger, pass breakups, diving all over the place, working his ass off to make plays for this team. And it's just – I don't know. It's frustrating. I'm thankful for him and I'm frustrated for him.
Yeah. I mean, with some of the holes that this team has, particularly in the middle of the field with Christian Kirksey in coverage, for example, you know, they made some changes in the slot. I think they pulled Chandon Sullivan at one point in the second half and put Will Redmond in there. You know, why would you ever target Jaire Alexander at that
point?
Just, you know, let him play on an island, just ignore that side of the field, pull the old Richard Sherman treatment and try to find places, you know, to go with the football on the other side of the field. And, you know, I think the analytics probably this week will not be very kind to Kevin King because it seemed like he got picked on a little bit. You know, certainly, you know, Kirksey had his issues in coverage again. They didn't do as bad of a job on TJ Hockenson as I was expecting they would. I think he caught 6 of 11 targets for like 43 yards. So not a bad stat line for another really good tight end. But there's it just seems like there's so many holes on this defense in coverage at least. And, you know, I do think some of that is schematic more than anything else.
Yeah. On Hockenson, at least one of those was a Chase Daniel pass that was a little off the mark, but let's get back to, as we wind down, let's get back to positive. I saw Vernon Scott make a few plays. Is there a guy that we haven't mentioned that maybe you want to highlight?
I mean, he's a guy. I think he still qualifies for guy status if I'm not
mistaken. He is up for adoption.
Yeah, 7th round rookie, you know. But no, he had a couple of nice plays. He had a big pass breakup on a play that I think ended up, you know, getting nullified by a defensive penalty anyway.
Why not?
I thought a couple. Adrian Amos had a couple of really nice plays in coverage. A couple of big plays right around the line of scrimmage in the passing game. So some credit to him there. And then there was a little sequence I think where Dean Lowry had a nice little two play sequence where mm-hmm. he got a
real sack.
Good stop in the run game for about a 2-yard gain, and then just burst through for a sack of Stafford. So
that sack was really funny because he breaks through the line and you can see the gears in his head, like don't get fined, don't get a flag. So he just kind of like pushes Stafford on the shoulders, and that like startles Stafford a little bit, but he doesn't go down. So Lowry's like, okay, fine, I'll wrap you up. And he just sort of hugs him and walks him backwards. It was like it was the most like modern NFL sack I've ever seen.
I joked that he sacked Stafford twice on the same play. it was ridiculous. So, I mean, I keep coming back to this defense seems to be so much less than the sum of its parts. And there's only, you know, at some point when that's the case, that falls on leadership, that falls on coaching.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's again, no shortage of talent here. It's a matter of getting this team to work cohesively together and putting them in positions to succeed. And it just doesn't feel like that's being done.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you know, are no truly elite teams this year, I think is the theme we've hit on. Every team is flawed. The Packers are flawed, but I want to end and just feeling positive. The Packers are division champions. They sit atop the conference, control their own destiny. If they win out, they get the number one seed, and that's a big deal. We're going to be back in a couple days, and I know that you guys have sent in your note nugs to at the APC pod, and some of them do skew negative, so there'll be plenty of time to chew on that stuff. But I wanted to end positively and just say super thrilled with another division championship, and I don't know, man. Let's get this conference lead over the finish line.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, couple of home primetime games coming up with Carolina and Tennessee. That one's going to be, I think, the interesting one. And yep. Then, hopefully finish it off with a win in Chicago. And, good things have happened when the Packers played Chicago in week 17 over the last decade or so.
Damn so straight.
Let's hope it doesn't maybe get as dramatic as that 2013 game was. But, Maybe we'll get a little bit of a springboard effect like it did in 2010.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully we finish off well. I'm going to finish off this this sip here and mazel to you, Tex. Thank you for joining me. And we're going to hit the outro music. Packers win, Lions lose. Division champs, baby. Woo!
Slammed it.